Welcome to Form of Passion, episode 120. Want to thank everybody for joining us here. Wanted to highlight the recent bonus episode that we put out before we get started here. We put out an episode to kind of go over the festival that by the time this episode comes out will be kind of underway, happening in North Carolina. We use it as an opportunity to kind of promote Overcome Fest, but also wanted to use it as an opportunity to kind of showcase what our Patreon format is like. So, you know, you guys are going to get an extra episode for free this month, but it's going to be kind of like what our Patreon feed, you know, comes off as. In this case, it was discussing a festival coming up this weekend. If you like that episode, if you like this episode and you want to support the podcast and get that additional episode on the last Friday of each month, you can subscribe to our Patreon at www.patreon.com/formofpassion. And for $2 a month, you're going to get an additional episode at the end of each month that's going to be a little bit more discussion-based as opposed to like something that's like interview-oriented. Today's guest has been on before on that feed, and now they're going to be on the main feed. I will say to, you know, today's guest is somebody that is, I believe they have a bit of a, I say this about some of our guests, but I, you know, the only ones I say this about are the ones I truly believe it to be true with. He has a bit of a Midas touch with anything he's involved in, be it, you know, bands like Okulu or Illusion, Countdown, his most recent project, Star 67. You know, I'm a fan of Reaction. He runs Cash Only Records. You know, everything this guy is involved in has a cool feel to it and is sick. And that's rare. You know, some people only get one thing. And this guy has about five. So, hats off to him. But today's guest, a man of the contemporary hardcore sphere, Mr. Connor Jones. Connor, thank you so much for joining us.
Yo, thanks for having me, bro. Let's do it. Absolutely.
Connor, you know, I've encountered you in multiple spheres physically, what I mean by that is that, you know, I've known you to, I think when I first started hearing about you, you were living in Boston. I, you know, started becoming like more friends with you when you were living in Brooklyn, but I know that your origin point is Texas. Is that where your story begins? Were you born in Texas?
Yeah, born and raised Houston, Texas, like right outside the city proper in the burbs.
And you're there now. Is that correct? You've moved back to Texas?
Yeah, I'm in Austin. Now. So nice. A bit Austin of a rocks. Homecoming.
Hell yeah. A little full circle moment.
Yeah, exactly.
I've had the pleasure of playing Houston before and everything, but I didn't get it really a lot of time to spend there and kind of, you know, get a bit of the lay of the land. What was growing up in Houston, you know, like for you? Like, what do you remember from your childhood there?
I mean, I was definitely in the full like suburbs life. Didn't really start going into Houston later until I was like getting it like fully into music, and I was like, oh, this band I like is playing in the city, I want to go. But also a lot of my formative years were in like middle school, junior high. Mm-hmm. Where my family was like, fuck the city life. We want to live in the country.
Ah.
And we moved to like the Texas Hill Country. So that's actually like a lot of kind of like early childhood memories.
Really? Okay. So
yeah.
Previous to, you know, so there's a time period where you end up, you know, moving like further out. Now, your family, were they originally from that area? Like, or did they migrate to Texas, you know, at some point in time in kind of the family tree?
Yeah, they're both sides, like my mom's and dad's sides, deep roots in Texas.
Okay.
My mom's side is like more East Texas, Louisiana vibes.
Mm.
Like even further back to my dad's side, like back to like the late 18th century is like in Louisiana, which is actually crazy. And then my dad's side was more like North Texas, like greater Dallas area around like the early 1800s. And like, we've done like some dope family tree shit too, where we like it's really cool to like, it's all like documented and shit. And there's like cool cowboy photos and
Oh, like, sick. Okay.
Great, hell great, yeah. Great grandpa. So
deep Texas, real Texas roots there.
Yeah.
You know, your family, you know, be that you're such an extremely musical person. Was that something that was a part of their pedigree as well? Or is that something that you kind of came into on your own?
Yeah. Well, so I always used to say that I never came from a musical family, but then when I started like playing music with homies and like, they'd maybe like come to my parents' house and they'd see my dad's like huge vinyl collection. They'd be like, "Whoa, this is so sick." And I was like, "Your parents don't have that. Like, your parents don't fuck with music." And they're like, "No." And so like, it wasn't until later that I realized like, oh, my dad's like a music fanatic. My mom's a music fanatic. And like, they, like, not everyone has that. And I didn't realize that growing up. It wasn't until I was adult that I was like, I definitely come from a musical family.
What kind of stuff were they listening to? Like what do you remember kind of being around the house or things that they were like really like passionate about?
Yeah. Like, if I could classify my dad, I would say he's like the classic rock super fan. He was a Deadhead in like the late 80s, early 90s, but he's like he knows like the Cuddy bit, like all the side projects of the side projects.
Okay.
And then my mom was like, she was going to Numbers Nightclub in Houston in the 80s, like the goth night, the 80s night, like the fucking new wave shit. And so like that was more her bag. And so it's kind of cool. Like, dude, where they both collide is Talking Heads.
Which that makes complete sense based off of like my dad is like similar to your father's a big classic rock guy, but that like he goes new wave enough to be down with Talking Heads. I feel like that was like this weird like unity band between like,
yeah, they like crossed over.
Yeah. Yeah. Oddly enough, which is really strange because Talking Heads is a weird band. That somehow that somehow made it its way into like non-weird spaces. Like when you're a kid though, like were your parents putting you onto this stuff, or was it kind of like, oh, that's what they're into, and you just kind of by periphery were like hearing it too, or was it like an act of like, oh, you should check this out?
It definitely was just kind of always on. Like, they would, anytime we were in the car, music is playing. But then when I started getting into music, they definitely tried to like be like, listen to this, listen to this, listen to this. And I'd be like, that's stupid, or like, that's lame. But it wasn't until later that I was like, shit, everything they like is actually really sick.
And chill. You know, so when you were kind of like listening to things, you know, what have you, what do you remember as a kid where you were like, this is like, oh, this is like my favorite stuff, like that, like my parents have shown me, or I found on my own, like what were your favorite bands when you were younger?
I was definitely a huge Led Zeppelin fan.
That kind of makes sense. Like gene seed wise with you. So I see that.
Yeah. And like, I think a big reason was I always was attracted to like heavy, intense music. Mm-hmm. Always. Like, even when I was a kid, I remember when I was really little, I saw a clip and I never even knew what it was, but I later found out it was a clip of The Clash playing I Fought the Law live.
Oh, sick.
And I was like, I remember thinking, I was like seven, and I was like, that's the coolest thing I've ever seen. But then when I was getting into music, I remember we listened to lots of XM radio.
Oh, yeah. I remember
the classic rock station is what we had on because my dad would always want to listen to that. Mm-hmm. And the heaviest thing they played was Led Zeppelin.
Yep. Yep. What I remember specifically from those stations, because my dad would listen to XM2, is that maybe it's like the heavy stuff they would play was like Zeppelin or maybe like Deep Purple. But yeah
like, I never got too into Deep Purple, actually.
Dude, I haven't really either, but I know it is the like roots of a lot of stuff that I do like, because it's kind of like roots doom. And yeah. I kind of want to get down. I kind of want to see what's down the rabbit hole there. I believe it's that time in my life.
I'm with you.
Let's get into Deep Purple, bro. It's time to get into the purple, man. But so you're hearing this stuff. Was there any, you know, be it that your parents, they didn't sound like they were like actually, they were like musicians as opposed to just music lovers. Was there any inclination in you to be like, oh, I like this stuff. It would be cool to play guitar or like, you know, like composing. Was that like a desire of you at the time?
The way I want that, the thing that made me want to start playing guitar is my brother started playing, my little brother.
Okay.
I have two younger brothers, and my younger brother, Aaron, started playing and he was getting lessons. And I remember he played on guitar Wake Up When September Ends,
which
of course at the time was like probably my favorite song.
Sure.
And I was like, dude, he can actually do it. Like, he can do it. I can do it. Like, I almost got jealous.
Yeah, you were like pissed off. You're like, wait a second. I'm the older brother here. Like, I should be.
Yeah, able to I was do like, oh, he's actually playing the song I hear on the radio.
Yeah.
And so that's what made me pick it up, is I just kind of started playing his guitar.
How old were you when this happened?
Sixth grade.
Okay. So like 11, 12 ish.
Yeah, around there.
Okay. So you start playing guitar and now, are you playing like stuff like Green Day, like, you know, or are you, is it like, what else are you kind of like attempting to play at that time?
Well, at first I didn't think I could play anything, because I was like, all of my favorite guitar players were like, at this point I gotten into a little bit heavier stuff. So I had transitioned from Zeppelin to like Van Halen.
Sick. Oh, well, that's.
And so now I was like my guitar hero was Van Halen, and I was like, I can't play that. And so I didn't learn to play anything for a while. I just learned the stuff that I learned in lessons, because my parents made me get lessons.
Okay. Okay. What kind of stuff were you learning in lessons?
Like, here's a G chord.
So like, you know what I mean? Fundamentals type stuff. Okay.
I remember eventually he taught me how to play Yellow by Coldplay.
Oh, okay.
Nice. That was probably one of the first songs that I was like allowed. He was like, okay, now you know some chords. Now you get to learn a song.
There you go.
And Free Fallin' by Tom Petty.
That's the easy, just the den. And then, that's a good, easy one to start with.
Begin track.
So during, you know, what do you remember? You said for a while you don't actually like learn any songs. What do you remember actually eventually starting to play, though?
Yeah, eventually my friend in school, Steven Ramsey, who was like, this is when I was living in the country, so he was literally the one other like alt kid.
Okay, so you guys have moved to the country at this point, sure.
Yeah, and he showed me Tool.
Interesting, okay.
Which is really random. How is this other kid really into Tool? I go down the rabbit hole with Tool. I start learning Tool songs. I learn about Drop D. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, of course. Of course.
And then from there, I got into like System of a Down.
Sure. That stuff is cracking really hard at the time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because this is like 2000.
Those bands are like the songs I first learned.
Like this is like what, like year 2004, 2005? Is that the time period?
Yep. Yep. Like 04 to 06.
About to say, because I'm thinking if Wake Me Up When September Ends comes out, like when you're 11 or so, it's like, yeah, like I feel like System of a Down and like that's like Toxicity comes out maybe like 2 to 3 years later. So like that's right about.
I think like all the System, I remember by the time I got into System of a Down, they were already done playing, because I would look them up and everyone would be like, they're on hiatus.
Oh, for real? And I didn't even know they really did that.
I was like, fuck, I missed it. Same with Slipknot too. Slipknot was on hiatus for a while. People don't even remember that.
I don't remember that. Oh, wait. I think I remember, because I didn't really listen to them when I was a kid at all. Like I still don't, but like I think I remember when Duality came out. Maybe they had been on a hiatus before that song.
I think it was right before Psychosocial came out.
Oh no, so it's much, much earlier than I'm thinking. Okay, yeah, okay, I got you. All right, sure. Okay, so they must have, because I forget that they were like a band in the 90s. Okay, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So you kind of start finding sort of like, if you're talking about Slipknot,
and system and tool to an extent, kind of like the like nu metal du jour, but the less rap oriented side, I'd say.
For sure. And like I got into like the hits of Linkin Park.
Of course. I mean, but, I feel like
I never even thought that undeniable. Like Linkin Park and System were like the same genre.
Yeah, and and low key they kind of aren't. Like Linkin Park is on a, like, both of those bands in a weird way are like completely their own thing. Like System doesn't really sound like anything else. I mean, it's a band like influenced by like Armenian music that's just, you know, like that nobody else does that. And then Linkin was like this like weird, like just a sweet spot enough for everybody to kind of be down with it. And it was kind of like inoffensive any direction. If you're in
right.
any, if
like, you're into, like everyone at music. My school liked Linkin Park, and this isn't like, this is like country kids.
Exactly. But like it was
no
like,
one at my school liked System of a Down.
No, too weird. Too like,
yeah.
Like what, and especially if you're in the country in Texas and like their big hit is like talking about angels deserving to die or whatever. I feel like that was probably
literally
like
Chop Suey was the one. That was the one.
Yeah. I feel like that was probably like something that was a little like, oh, keep that devil music away from me, you know, type shit.
Well, it's funny you say that because this is where my parents were their huge like church religion arc too. So that was definitely like
really
present at the time.
So they previously like weren't religious and then get religious during this time period.
They were literally born again Christian.
Whoa. Okay.
Yeah.
Now how was like, what was that dynamic like for you?
They just didn't allow me to do anything. The only stuff, like I just was either at the house or at the church.
Damn.
But you know, what's actually cool is that my parents were like, they wanted to make church like dope. So they would book like bands from all around Texas that were like Christian rock bands
sure.
to come play at our church.
Okay. Okay. So
I was like, and they would let the band stay at our house.
Okay. Okay. So it's like, they're kind of incorporated their interests into their new thing in a way. All right. That's chill.
Yeah. And then like all the like bands that would visit, they'd be like, oh, we love System of a Down. And I was like, okay. Right. So like, it's dope.
Okay. Right. Right. So you're kind of, you get sort of exposed to like bands and stuff during this time period.
Yeah, I guess I do. Yeah.
Okay. So you're around that and everything. You're playing guitar, but you're out in the country. Like, does, you know, you've seen these bands and stuff because they play the church. Is there anywhere in here where you're like, I would like to like play in a band?
Not at that point.
Okay.
That didn't happen until my parents, the recession hits. My parents are like, all right, we need to go back to the city and get to work.
Interesting. You know, that's such a crazy thing to think about. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Oh, so like 08, you're probably like what?
Yeah. 2008. I'm 13.
Okay.
And we moved back to the same exact, like 5 minutes away from where our old house was.
Gotcha. Okay.
And in that school, the started high school and at a new, like in my, the place I'm from, Sugarland. And all the kids there liked everything that was weird in the country.
Interesting.
And there was a band, like they all like System of a Down was like, they had all liked that for 4 years. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They like were that, into that's like old news, post-hardcore. Sure.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Well, hold
like,
on.
That like, was like post-hardcore, what the cool kids
post-hardcore of the time period.
Yeah. Yeah. Like Rise Records.
Right. Like what am I, and like, I don't think this is a Rise band, but I don't really know, but like, what, like stuff like the Chariot or whatever? Or?
Not like that. Like more like with like emo post-hardcore, like Chiodo.
Okay. Okay. Gotcha. Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. I know. I know,
and like kind of like pop punk adjacent a little bit.
Yes, yes, yeah. Where it's like definitely fits on Warped Tour, but it's like not pure pop punk. It has some elements of like something heavier in it, but it's not like metalcore necessarily. I know the time period you're talking about.
Yeah, and so like I was just getting into that whole world from that same friend Steven Ramsey in the country, and then we moved back. I was like, as I had just gone into it, everyone at that school was neck deep in it.
Like down. Okay, sure.
And there was a band at the school there that was like full. It was like the cool kids at the school had a band.
Interesting.
And one of them was my next door neighbor. And he heard me. Okay. Again, similar story with the guitar. My brother decided he wanted to play drums. I end up playing the drums instead of him.
I see.
And my next neighbor heard me playing drums, comes over and is like, yo, you're in our band.
Oh, so you got put down in like the cool band like immediately.
Yeah, it was like I got lucky. Yeah.
They didn't have a drummer?
They did, but he was bad.
Oh, and so you were
like, I wasn't great, but I was better.
Okay, chill. Hell yeah.
And so that's how I joined. He comes over and
what was the name of the band?
End of the Road.
Not bad. Not bad.
Yeah, not bad. And it was like pop punk. We had a couple breakdowns. You know what I'm saying? Okay.
Sure. Sounds like you were playing late 2000s post hardcore, which is I love when something happens like that in a very like of the time period manner. So totally. It's like cool that you were doing that. Like I don't know, that's kind of hard to explain, but it's like, oh, it's cool that you were doing that type of band during that time period, because that was the time period to do that type of band.
And yeah, and I was like 14 when like playing these shows, which is just like, I don't know, any 14-year-old playing a show, like I back it.
Oh, dude. I mean, I only like, I see it a little here in the Bay and it still trips me up, but only a little. There's only like one like 14-year-old around or something like that.
Yeah.
That's such a rarity now. So you're playing these shows now, like where are you playing these shows at?
There's a place called Java Junction in Houston.
Sure.
And I'm so young, I don't even really remember anything about it. I think they served coffee.
I mean, Java Junction, I would imagine.
Yeah. And like, I think that 10 for 10 tour went there.
Oh, okay. And that,
which
that
I didn't go a... to, but I remember the lore.
Mm-hmm. That was like a big tour for like getting people put on during that time period.
Dude, that needs to happen again. That's such a dope idea.
You know,
it would never.
Not for $10. Now
people are too business minded now.
Dude, I mean, you ain't wrong, brother. now it would be like you could do 10 for 10 for 30 maybe would be the deal.
Dude, it wouldn't. It's the most for the culture thing I've ever heard of. And like, I just don't know if people like would be down.
Well, now the difference is this, is that the very for the culture people wouldn't agree to do a tour with 10 bands.
yeah.
It, like because now it's like, now I feel like, and understandably so, the very for the culture people kind of only want to do stuff with other for the culture units or bands or things like that, and coordinating there's like a network of that, but like coordinating like 10 bands or something of that nature right now would be like really hard. But also people don't tour like that anymore. Unless
I think it should be done for the good of our world, for the good of
society. I don't disagree with you at all. I think it would
suck and it would be hard, and maybe not even every band would fuck with every band on the bill.
No,
I don't. That's kind of
that. I agree with you. I think another thing too is that one thing that's different now is that back then like everybody toured. And then now it's like only the, how do I put this? The more, we'll call it the people that are focused on getting the bag more so these days, they tour more, and the people that are like, I do this for the culture more so, they know that they don't have to be on the road like that. So they don't do the tour like that. But you know, if they have the ability, they should. But I digress. So during this time period, you're playing Java Junction. Now, with your parents being like, you're born again Christians at this time period, are they like, are they cool with this music, or are they like not down?
They're cool with the music. they do come to every single show I play or go to.
That's sick.
Yeah, at the time, I'm pissed.
Oh, at the time, it sucks.
But at the time, like, I'm a nerd, dude.
Yeah, like, God.
But looking back on it, I'm like, oh, no, they're just, like, wanted to make sure that it was, like, sick.
Yeah, they want to make sure it was sick, make sure that you're cool. And, like, also, like, they're coming to a show that you're playing and they're supporting you. Like, that is sick. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, end of the road, are you guys playing outside of Houston at all, or is it just like largely local stuff?
Nah, just local stuff.
Okay. So how long do you do this band for?
I do it for a couple years. Okay. Then I joined a different band because I was like, I don't want to play drums no more.
Okay, so you go to guitar.
Playing drums sucked.
I would not know, and I don't ever want to know. So you moved from drums to guitar in a new band.
Yeah, because I was over fucking lugging a drum set around everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. It's like I reserved drums for somebody else. Like that seems like such a bear. Like they are our strongest soldiers because they put up with so much bullshit, but at the same time, it's not going to be me.
Literally, I was like, I don't want to do this anymore.
What's the new band called? And like, you know, like what's the vibe?
Yeah, so it's full on like metalcore.
Okay, like metalcore, like what though?
Like metalcore, like I'm trying to think of what to compare.
Like As I Lay Dying,
like August Burns Red.
Okay, so like, you know, they're not a new wave of American metal band, but they're like kind of like something that I feel like would have like been birthed out of that.
And it's like, they're like kind of like technical. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like I've never really listened to August Burns Red, but are they doing the, like the Gothenburg metal thing where it's like a lot of like the, like, is it like melodic?
Yeah, but not like symphonic.
Yes. I know.
It's mostly just like, it's like kind of like shreddy, but like there's breakdowns, there's chugs.
Okay.
But there's like some weird time. Like if anything, kind of like Between the Barrier.
Sure. Okay. So it's, yeah, technical, hard, but like not just caveman.
Right. And so that's kind of like through learning like all those kinds of bands songs is where I like developed being able to like play more intricate stuff on the guitar.
Let's say you're a very, very good guitar player. So if this is kind of your starting point, so to speak, that is a good place to start to like kind of do like things that are more difficult.
To go from like beginner to like intermediate level guitar
player. Right. So what is the name of this band?
This band is called Imagine Dreams in Action.
That very good metalcore band name. Yeah. So Imagine Dreams in Action. How did you met these guys? By just playing and stuff at End of the Road?
They went to my high school.
Okay.
And they were like a couple of years younger than me.
Gotcha. All right. So you're
and they started the band, and then I asked to join because I was like a fan.
Chill. Okay. Hell yeah. When you're in a Dreams Imagine Action, are you like playing the same places that End of the Road did, or are you kind of like doing different stuff?
Yeah, that's when we start like gigging more around town.
Gotcha.
We're still only playing Houston, but we're playing like all over the Chill. City.
Hell yeah.
Like, and like other suburbs.
Okay.
Like, okay. Like I would play a show that's like 2 hours away, but that's still like the greater Houston.
I mean, Houston's area. Big. So yeah, like that makes sense. Huge. Like it's a huge area. So crazy.
Yeah, like I would play shows in like, yeah, in like the Woodlands to like people listening, like in Pasadena, in Baytown. I even played a show in like Beaumont, which are like, all of these are like in the greater Houston area, but like Beaumont's like, I mean, that's like a different city, but that's like 2 hours.
Yeah, I've heard of Beaumont for sure.
Yeah.
But so you're getting out there in the region, no doubt. And like, are the shows like good? Like, cause there's sometimes you're in a high school band where it's like you're playing, but the shows kind of suck, but like other people get lucky and the shows are sick. Like, are you playing like sick shows?
It's hit or miss.
Okay.
Sure. Like our first show was, we actually threw it ourselves, and it was like at the church I went to, actually, they let us do it. Sure. And we did it like we did it as a benefit for like families in need in Houston. And so that's what like convinced the church to let us use it as a venue. And that was like sold out.
Okay.
It was epic. But then like after that, it was like we'd play random but even when the shows were bad, we would just like joke around on stage. And it was still like it never like bummed me out if there wasn't people there. Yeah, it was just like this is what you do.
So you do this, you know, do you do this for like the duration of like the rest of high school or does it continue beyond high school?
It's basically ends when I graduate because then I move to Boston.
Okay. Now, away from music, was your school life chill or did you like hate it?
When I first moved there, it was awesome. Because like all these other kids were like into some of the shit I was into.
Chill.
And then, as I like started getting more into music and like made friends in like the music scene, like that lived on the other side of town, I was started to just like week after week, I was like less interested in not only school, but like the people that I went to school with.
Right. Okay. I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah, just because I started to meet other cool people who are like putting themselves out
there. People that are probably like more on your wavelength and like into things that you're into, like even more so than the people at school. But you end up, I assume you do well in school and end up going to college in Boston.
Yeah, I mean, so I went to music school.
Okay,
but like I wasn't like a bad student, but I also like. I remember I beefed my teacher in my senior year of science, and I still fucking beef her to this day because she literally failed me to like make a
fucking
point.
Hell. Jesus Christ.
She was like, I'm going to fail you and you're not going to be able to go to like a state
man, school. Fuck out of here.
Because you need 4 years of
Jesus
science.
Jesus Christ.
Little does she know, bitch, I'm going to art school. It don't even matter.
Fucking face. God damn people.
Yeah. So like, sad.
So where do you end up going to school in Boston?
I go to Berklee College of Music, which is a contemporary music.
Yeah. School. It's well done. Did you have to like submit like an audition tape or anything like that?
Yeah. They like send people to like, they basically like send a team to like go on tour basically and audition kids in like all around the country, crazy. All around the world, really. So I just went to auditions
and they were like, you're the guy, let's go.
I mean, because there's kids who go there who are like straight geniuses.
I mean, Berklee's a big deal for sure.
Well, like there's people who go there and they're 18 years old and they are virtuosos.
They're crazy. Fucking hell.
Yeah. It's insane. Nice. So I wasn't like that. And I will never, like, I met people who we're 18 years old and we're better than I will ever
be. Yeah. Well, I believe it. You know, there's just like some people are born with it. You know, it just is what it is.
Yeah. It's just like, especially with playing an instrument, it's like some people just have like a, like autistic level of like
the knack.
You know what I mean?
You go there and like, did you have like an issue with like being like did you like want to move away or were you like, I'm kind of reluctant about this?
No, I really wanted to.
Okay. You were ready to go.
Because I was really music. I was obsessed with music and my parents are like educated people and they were like worried that I wasn't into like, that I wasn't going to go to like do anything good in school. But they knew that I was like smart enough to, you know what I mean? But then I told them about Berklee and then one of their like family friends was like, your son should go to Berklee.
Okay.
And like between me and then that, they were like, this is what you should do.
Okay. So it's a bit of outside influence and inside influence.
Right. Like someone else, like what definitely was in their ear and told them that it would be a good idea.
When you got there, did you immediately like take to the town and like, you know, fall right into place, or did you have kind of did you have any kind of difficulty assimilating, so to speak?
Definitely, because also right when I like probably the spring semester before I moved to Boston, I find out about hardcore music.
Oh, okay.
Which is like hardcore music's like the opposite of like educated music.
Yes. Correct.
And so like while a lot of these people are just now starting to get into like learning music theory, I was like, fuck that.
I'm like, nah, man, it's time to mosh.
Like, right. Which, so like, I was literally going to music school and like learning shit. And then all the music I'd listen to would basically ignore everything I learned. And those were my favorite bands.
What kind of stuff did you find and were getting into?
Friends I made through like playing shows, and they showed me like, I think like the first, what's the first hardcore band I ever heard? It could have been like Soul Search.
Okay. That would make sense for the time period. Cause this is like what, like 2010.
Yeah. Because okay. I remember a friend showed me videos from Sound and Fury.
Mm, yep.
And we were like, whoa, this is way doper than any show that we've been to.
Hold on though. You go to college when? Like what year is your freshman year?
My freshman year is fall 2012.
Okay.
And so I probably get into hardcore like late 2011, early 2012.
I'm trying to think if Soul Search played Sound and Fury 2011. I know they did a surprise song at 12 because I was there. And
I was there too.
Oh, so you end up going to the Sound and Fury in 2012.
Yes.
Oh, so you get into hardcore and then you're like, oh, this is what I'm into now.
I'm telling you, these were my favorite bands.
So sick.
Like my favorite artists, you know what I'm saying?
Fuck yeah. So drop it on me. What are you feeling at this time? What are you getting into? What do you love?
Okay, a band that like I remember they opened Sound and Fury 2012. The set was at the time the craziest set I had ever seen.
Okay.
Disgrace.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So the young brothers band, of course.
Yo,
hard band.
I don't even know. Like, did they, like, I remember they put out a 12 inch. I don't really remember if they did anything after that.
They have two records. Give me 1 second. I will pull them up. I want to say it was like both like Closed Casket to my knowledge. Okay. So they,
only think I know like the first one.
They have an LP that came out in 2015. And then
wow,
they had,
to, really?
Yeah, they did. Cause I want to say, oh, I saw them around that time period, but I can't remember what gig. And then they had, the 2012 record, which would have come out right around.
I know that one.
Yeah. 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 So would have come out right around Sound and Fury. Cause it was July of 2012 is what it says. So,
and also right before Sound and Fury, I had gone to Chaos and Tejas.
Oh, so now that my jealousy is going to be setting in deeply because the lineups,
yeah, that was the one that like, oh, this is like completely different than everything. Like I used to kind of think it was not that different than like the metalcore bands that I had liked before.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to Chaos and Tejas, I was like, oh, this is like completely 100% different.
What bands did you see at Chaos that year?
Spirit, Stick Together, No Tolerance, Omegas, The Breakdown Reunion.
God, what a lineup.
Which when they announced the Breakdown Reunion, that's when I first listened to Breakdown.
I mean, very sick.
Because of that fest.
Good way to find out about them.
I saw Hoax at the recycling plant.
Hell yeah. Shout out to, I think he listens to all these. Shout out to the homie Ian. Dude, fuck yeah. They had such good lines.
Still one of my favorite bands.
Hoax is so cool, dude. Like
one of the best bands of like the past 10, 15 years.
And yo, I will say this, and like you can map how almost all popular punk bands right now, like within the hardcore punk sphere, you can somehow map kind of back to their sound.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And totally. Like, I remember like when I interviewed Ian on this, I was like, okay, bro, you're kind of the origin point for like what a lot of punk sounds right now. Like what it sounds like right now. What were your influences? Where did you get the Hoax sound? And what he said on the episode was like, I was like, that makes complete sense. It was Gizm and Black Metal.
Hell yeah.
And I was like, there it is.
That makes complete sense.
I would have never guessed the black metal thing. But now that when he told me that,
you know what,
like,
I kind of hear some Bad Brains in it too, though. In the way that like I feel like a lot of the early Bad Brain songs are kind of like every like where the notes go aren't necessarily almost random at times.
Agreed. For sure.
You know what I mean? But it like forms like a melody.
Yes. And Hoax does do that as well. I think another thing too is that those dudes came from like the scram scene. And when I found that out, I was like, okay, there we go. Another piece of the puzzle that kind of
which
like,
I was also into that at the time.
Really? Okay. So like, what kind of stuff were you into like that at the time?
I was really into like, okay, I don't know if this scrams, but like Touche.
Sure. I think they're kind of like, we'll call that big room scrams.
Yeah. Like I was really into Touche. I was really, I like Defeater.
Mm-hmm.
Those are really the only two that I knew about.
Sure. And I remember like you go to that Sound of Fury in 2012 and I didn't know about Touche at all. And I was playing that year and, I remember Touche was headlining a day. And yeah. I was like, really? I was like, that band? Because I just didn't know. I just didn't know. People in Richmond didn't really listen to Touche. So it was like, I just didn't know that stuff. And I remember the song that starts with the clapping.
Oh, so good.
I was like, everybody in the room was doing it. I was like, oh, fuck. I was like, this is something. This is some
dude,
shit.
Touche is an amazing band, honestly.
Yeah, like I interviewed Jeremy on here before, and it got me to kind of like dive a little deeper on their material. But they also have a lot of material, so it's kind of hard to know where to start. But definitely, I would call that like an important band. For sure.
Yeah, totally. And I got into them too, just cause like I said, I had been shown a Sound and Fury video of Soul Surge playing. And then what I did is I just pulled up the Sound and Fury poster and went down the list and listened to every band.
Right. So you were into Soul Surge. You like Disgrace. What else was kind of ticking the box for you?
I mean, obviously the best band was Trapped Under Ice.
Oh, I mean, like that undeniable,
which is the first hardcore set I ever saw live.
Okay, so you see them where? What, at Chaos or something else?
I see them at a venue called Warehouse in Houston, in the small room, and on the Keepers of the Faith tour.
Mm, very cool.
Very cool. And it's that's what made me be like, okay, this band is like the best band.
This is it. Yeah. So you're starting school, you have just gotten like fully into hardcore. You're in Boston.
Yeah.
And this is Boston in 2012. This is Boston post Have Heart and like post Guns Up. And it's like kind of like cause Boston, it was the history of Boston is strong and it is like obviously like always putting out cool bands and stuff, but it had like a real peak in the 2000s. Were there like a good amount of shows at the time period to go to, or did it feel fallow? Like what was sort of the lay of the land for you, like starting out school there?
Yeah. So I actually think that like 2012, 2013 might be peak Boston hardcore, maybe not peak, but like one of the peaks in terms of like quality.
It definitely started, it kind of like crafted its own thing at the time.
Because it was like, this was big, like Painkiller Records era.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. It's like, it's kind of like, whereas like 2000s Boston was sort of like Trapped Under Ice kind of took the spot of Have Heart, and like that sound kind of like took over, and like at the like Half Heart ending kind of like, I feel like stopped that sort of like hey, here is the flowers on the coffin of like melodic hardcore at being the thing at the time. But then Boston does this thing where it's like, okay, it's like now what's popping here is like the root stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And so, which all of those bands, those Boston hardcore bands, like I mentioned, Free Spirit, mm-hmm. No Tolerance, they were in with like the chaos scene.
Yes, exactly.
So like, yep. I see Free Spirit and No Tolerance at Chaos, and I was like, oh shit, like this type of band, like the shows are just as cool as like a scary band.
For sure. Absolutely.
And then I moved to Boston, and those bands are playing like every month.
All the time, which is crazy to think about. No Tolerance playing every month. If only we lived in that reality now.
But it'd be like No Tolerance this month, Free Spirit the month after that. And then Pat Flynn's band Clear the month after
that. Clear rips.
Yeah. And then Hoax is playing. You know what I'm saying? Hoax
is rocking.
And literally like the first, like within the first 3 days of moving to Boston, I see Bane play a house show.
Crazy. That's very surprising for the time period too.
It was fucking awesome. And I find out through about all these shows through the Bridge Nine board.
Oh dude, the Bridge Nine board.
A great resource.
A really dope resource. Like it was a double-edged sword for certain. But I would be lying if I said I like was not entertained by kind of the like sleaziness of that website, but also it was a great utility. Like
I don't even know about that. I was so young. I literally just like, and I didn't find out about it until someone told me about it in 2012.
Right.
And there's a thread called MA Shows, Massachusetts Shows. And uh-huh. It was bookmarked.
I remember the thread.
Yeah.
I remember it. Man, what a crazy.
Dude, motherfuckers don't know about threads anymore.
Dude, they don't know about threads, dog. They don't know about that shit. Dude, the Hardcore Myths and Legends thread was awesome.
Damn. I don't even know about that one.
Bro, dude, it was like.
Is it just lore?
It was just lore. It was just stories. And it was like, and because it could kind of be like presented from like a place of anonymity, like it was just people just like letting it fly. So like some of the stuff probably wasn't true, but like some of the stuff was like seemed pretty true, you know? Damn.
That seemed like that could be like kind of bad in the era that we're in now of like
100%
social policing era. Yeah.
Oh no. I mean, like if people unearthed that thread now, it would be like not good. But
dude, yeah.
But at the time, I was like, yo, like this crazy, you know, kind of stuff. And I found out about cool demos on there and like new music and stuff. But like, I mean, there was such an active website too, because you would like see a post on the front page. And if you just refresh the page, that post would then, because it was so active, that post should now be on like the second page or something.
Yeah. It was
crazy.
Really active.
So you found out about shows on that. How did you start meeting people around there that you like wanted to play music with?
Yeah. So I remember for probably the first year, I'm just going to school and like I go to every show. Sick. And I'm so shy, I don't talk to anyone.
Right.
I just go by myself.
Solo soldier.
And yes, sir. Like there was a couple times I brought some like Berkeley kids with me and they were like, fuck this.
They're like, I hate this.
Yeah, they're like, I was like, want to come to this show? And they're like, no.
Like, no, people like hit each other in there. Like, get out of here.
Right. They're like, this is just whack. And so I was like, all right, well, I'm going. And I went by myself. And I lived in like Back Bay, which at the time in Boston, like all the shows happening like in the city proper, either in Boston or in Cambridge.
Yeah, I know a lot were happening in Cambridge.
Yeah, and so it was like really easy for me to get to all of them. And eventually, I remember a guy comes up to me at a show who's like, I wish I like knew who he was now, but he was an old head, and he started just chatting me up. And then eventually, like the band's about to play, is like in between sets at a show, the next band's about to play, and he goes, "Hey man, it was like really nice to meet you. You should introduce yourself to some people here, because I know a lot of the guys at like a lot of the older guys here would really appreciate like getting to know you."
So, okay. And, but you have no idea who this was.
I don't remember. But he was like an old head, and I'm sure he was like friends with like the people playing.
Sure.
Whoever it was at the time. And I remember like just after he said that, I was like, he's right. I should just like start talking to people. And so I made it a point where like every show I go to, I'm just going to like introduce myself to a new person. And that's how I met actually like a lot of the people that like ended up introducing me to who I'm friends with now.
Chill. Okay. Hell yeah. So like you,
yeah.
You,
like I remember the first person I met was Jack Dow, who sings in Burst of Rage.
Yep. Yep. And he was a Connecticut guy. Yeah.
Yeah, he was Connecticut, but he would come to Boston all the time.
Travel up. Yeah. Cause like what year is this? This is 13 now, 2013?
Yeah, 13. Yeah, probably around 13.
So we're on the, and you were a practitioner of this or around for it. This is kind of like the Reaper era is almost on its close, and the Democore era is like about to kind of begin.
Yes.
Cause it's like TUI is going on hiatus in 2013. Turnstile is starting to do more. And then like you mentioned Burst of Rage, you're starting to hear bands pop up that are like Unified Right starts becoming a thing like right around a year and things of that nature. So during this time period, you start meeting people and everything. How does it like, you know, is anybody like, oh, like you play guitar, like you should play with X, Y, or Z. Has that come up at all or no?
Yeah, it comes up because, I just start meeting some people and talking, and I'm like, I go to Berkeley, and they're like, oh, so you play music. Mm-hmm. Cause that's why I was in Boston.
Right.
In the first place was to basically learn how to play music. So it came up almost immediately every time.
Okay. Did anybody tap you? Did you end up linking up with anybody or does that come later?
Yeah. So that's when eventually Jack was like, join my band. I'm starting a band, join it.
So you were in Burst of Rage?
I was in Burst of Rage.
I did not know that.
Holy damn, bro.
I've been playing shows with you for like longer than I thought. That's crazy.
Yeah, dude. Didn't I'm pretty sure we played a show together with Breakaway in Jacksonville.
Oh, yes. So we played a few shows together at this time period then, because if you played that show in Jacksonville that had like that band Head Creeps on it and Free at Last.
Dude, yeah. So that was the first date of the Burst of Rage Free at Last.
Fucking hell. Okay, then yes, we played together at that show.
Great show, by the way.
Great show. Great show.
Unified Right also played that show. An early Unified Right show.
Damn. Okay, so Unified Right played that. I remember playing with Burst of Rage again at Edge Day like 2015. So a couple years later too. But you and I hadn't crossed paths yet. Interesting.
Yeah, we hadn't even met each other at that point.
Nah, man. Crazy. Okay, so you get asked to be in Burst of Rage. Did not know you're in Burst of Rage. Okay, interesting.
Yeah, man.
That was
the first band I started playing music with on like the East Coast.
Interesting, man. Okay.
And it's how I met like all the people that I've pretty much made music with. So.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. So he asked you to be in Burst of Rage, and like Burst of Rage, when I remember, was like, we're going for like late 80s youth crew roots hardcore.
Yeah, we were obsessed with Wide Awake.
Yes, amazing. Of course, Connecticut.
Yes.
Why not, you know?
And at the time too, I was like, okay, so also while that was happening, I had an old head in Houston who was like, he's like, yo, I'm your old head. This is what's good. And,
okay.
And he was like a Youth Crew fanatic.
Sure.
And he was like, this is good. Everything else sucks.
Okay. What kind of stuff was he putting you onto?
Like New York hardcore, just straight 80s New York hardcore.
The good shit, of course.
Yeah. So that's when he was like, oh, you don't know like the Raw Deal demo. Mm-hmm. You're a loser. You're a poser.
Do it.
I have to learn about all of this.
Bring it back. Bring back calling people a loser for not knowing.
I mean, yeah, low key. Like, I mean, it's just like but it's also good. Like, I feel like people just need to bring back like putting on younger people to stuff because
agreed.
Like whatever you're into, because it makes for like more diversity of bands. Like I feel like right now a lot of bands are kind of doing similar things.
Oh boy.
When there should be like a band that sounds like Wide Awake playing with like the bands that exist now. Yeah. That's just, I feel like not happening.
I will say, we'll give this a little timestamp, of the era. This interview is coming out. That Utility demo that came out was the first thing I had heard. Oh, I don't know if you've heard that yet.
I haven't listened yet.
Dude, it's Youth Crew. And I was like, and it's like, just like fast pitch over the plate Youth Crew. That's, and I was like, sick. Damn, I have not heard this done in I don't know how long. So
I love that.
You know, hey, you were there for the inception of DemoCore. Now I think we're kind of getting a potential resurgence.
Well, the funny thing about DemoCore is I feel like I didn't even notice that it was something different because all those like Painkiller bands were kind of doing that already.
Yeah, they were doing it, but in like a way that was like from the approach of punk.
Like no one called like World War IV demo core.
No, but I think retroactively they technically fit in that category.
Yeah. But even like I feel like No Tolerance and like Step Forward are kind of like proto demo core.
But like there's something if I heard No Tolerance and I heard Step Forward and someone asked me, is this demo core? I would say like no, but I don't know why. But if I hear Free Spirit, I say yes.
Free Spirit was a huge influence on that scene.
Exactly. Yeah. Something about Step Forward and No Tolerance, it's like
if I had to surmise what I think it is that Free Spirit, what they were doing that a lot of other demo core bands ended up following, mm-hmm. is they were like really trying to sound like a very niche specific sound.
Yes.
And like, whereas like Step Forward just sounds like a hodgepodge of like, just like Youth Crew hardcore.
Agreed. And like No Tolerance as a whole, it's like Brotherhood is for sure in there like pretty distinctly, but like, but it's not just Brotherhood. Whereas it's
they're Free not Spirit, like, let's try to recreate Brotherhood.
Yeah, no. Whereas Free Spirit, it's like, we're going to be straight ahead or we're going to be NYC.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I feel like that thread is like, that's kind of what led me to make Burst of Rage.
Like, we're going
to
be white.
Or not, I didn't like to write. That's what was guiding me when I was writing songs for Burst of Rage.
Right.
I think that's also what ultimately guided me when making like Sound Down or Illusion or Ikulu.
Oh man. Well, we'll get to that because I can't wait to talk about that stuff. So you do Burst of Rage and you know, you guys are like playing around. You say like you end up doing like a tour like pretty soon after the band starts.
Yeah.
Okay. And you link up
only off a demo.
That means, hey, we're a demo core time period, of course. How did you link up with Free at Last?
I met them when they came through Texas in like maybe like winter break between two semesters.
Ah, okay.
And then completely separately, Jack, the singer of Burst of Rage, was friends with Josh, the singer of Free at Last. And I feel like they just kind of like, because I remember one day, like, I just got the text in the group chat that was like, hey, we're doing a full US with Free at Last.
And you were like, oh. Yep.
And it wasn't even like, are you down?
It was just like, hey, this is happening.
It was just like, this is happening.
Yeah, I've done some tours like that. I've set up some tours like
it's happening. I love that energy though.
Oh no, I mean like, hey, like I'm not as bad at that as I used to be, but I definitely
it's like, the tour's happening. The ship's leaving the station. Either you're on.
You can play cool. If not, we'll find somebody else, you know?
Right.
But so you end up doing, this is your first tour.
First tour.
Okay. And this is what time period? I'm trying to remember.
I think this happened summer 2014.
That's
maybe 2015.
Right. All right. Let me think about this.
I literally can't remember.
Man, okay, 14. It might have been, be it that I played a show on this tour, it might have been 15. I think it was 15.
I think it was 15.
And yeah. So you've been in school, this is like what, your sophomore year or junior year?
This is my sophomore year. Well, okay. I mean, I've been there for 3 years, but I went to college for 5 years because I like switched majors and shit.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So, all right. So you guys go on this tour and like, how does it go? Like, is it like everything you wanted it to be? Like, did anything fall short from what your expectations were? Like
there was no expectations. It was just like hit or miss. Like some of the shows, like, okay, there was a couple of dark moments.
Oh yeah.
Detroit.
All of us.
Detroit. One of the worst shows I've ever played, probably the worst. Two people paid.
Really interesting because this is like Freedom time period. And I would imagine like a tour like Free at Last, A Burst of Rage would be like, that would be like a thing that kids there would be into.
Yeah, I think we just didn't know those guys. And I think like maybe Nick Hinch, who played bass in Burst of Rage, maybe DM'd one of them, but he was also like literally 16 years old.
Oh, he was a boy. Yeah. I mean, like, yeah. Kids just like hella young.
And so they were like, they probably were just like, who is this kid messaging? Who is this?
Yeah, for sure. Okay. All right. So, you know, I mean, hey, if you ain't played
Fargo, North Dakota,
how'd that go?
Yo, actually dope.
Hell yeah. There it is, dude. Yeah. See, that's the thing is it's the shit you don't expect that you're like, damn,
it's the shit you don't expect. But that was when we had to have a conversation in the middle of the, and there is a documentary, A Burst of Rage Free at Last Youth Crew Across America documentary on YouTube.
Oh, I'm going to watch it.
It's fire. And there is a point in the documentary where we have to sit down and have a conversation where we say, listen, we're losing so much money. Should we quit?
Shit.
And we decided that the show must go on.
Yeah, you got to finish it up.
Yeah, fuck it.
Damn. Hate to hear that though.
But it didn't matter because we were just having a blast every day.
Just fucking doing it. So you end up finishing the tour. You know, come back, and everything. But Burst of Rage doesn't do a record. It was just demo.
Yeah, we put out a demo and we write us like probably four songs for a 7-inch.
Right.
And then there's like some drama with our singer.
Yeah. I kind of remember.
And so we're kind of just like, okay, this is like, fuck this.
All right. So you move on after kind of like dealing with some shit with Jack. And you had these songs. Did you end up ever using those songs for anything else or did you just kind of like shelve them?
Nah, they're never been used.
Okay. So did you immediately jump into trying to do something else or were you like, I don't know, like for lack of a better term, like shell shocked from the situation?
No. Well, so as like while Burst of Rage was still a band, that's when I started writing Countdown music.
Ah, yes. Now Countdown, what were you going for? Like specifically?
Chromax.
And I do hear that, but I feel like I hear other stuff too. I hear Mags big time.
Okay. So this was I had a vision and I was like, I was like, why is there not a band that sounds like Chromax?
True. There really aren't.
Dude, which is weird.
It's so weird.
Like there's other crossover bands, but Age of Quarrel is like barely even a crossover record.
No, And, I mean, it barely. And the thing is like, what's really crazy about Edge of Quarrel is like, myself included, I think I like did Pound for Pound, and I think that like has to be my favorite hardcore record. Yo, no band sounds like that.
Yeah, which is like, I just thought that was weird. Like, there's a million bands that sound like Youth of Today. There's a million bands that sound like Earth Crisis. Like, why? And Cro-Mags, I love Youth of Today, but like Cro-Mags is better.
Yes.
Like, why aren't people copying this?
So you were like, with Countdown, you're like, all right, your vision was to do that.
I was basically like, there's all these bands that copy Youth of Today. Mm-hmm. Bands I love.
Yep.
I mentioned Step Forward earlier. There's bands that copy Straight Ahead.
Yep.
I was like, I want to copy Cro-Mags.
So what I remember kind of from Countdown was it was kind of like copying Cro-Mags, but it was almost like sans the crossover aspect. It was almost like you like dialed the crossover aspect back, which I feel like you would turn up for a Kulu later.
Yes. Totally.
Okay. All right.
Because so I wanted gritty. I wanted it to be like have element to it. But then I also was like pulling in like funk. Like, cause like even like fucking We Gotta Know is like there's like a funk to it. Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Like Mackie, like from what I know, like didn't really listen to like was into like Discharge and like Bad Brains, but then otherwise he just listened to kind of like jazz.
Yeah. I remember I was listening to a lot of hip hop at the time.
There you go. And you can hear so that. Like, if you think about that with Countdown, you can hear that.
Yeah. And like, even in like the drumming, like the, like,
yep.
I wanted the breakdowns to like not be like super like hard, but I wanted them to be like, you want to like bob your head to it.
Definitely. A lot of bounce.
Yeah. So that, like me getting into hip hop happened at the same, like when I went to college.
And what kind of stuff were you getting into hip hop with?
Just New York City hip hop.
Okay. So just the like, golden era.
I was big. Yeah. I was big on just like 80s, 90s New York hip hop.
Okay. So from like, or were you listening to like stuff like Eric B, or was it more like Nas?
I got into Eric B. I got into Rakim, and then I got into Nas. I got into Tribe Called Quest. I got into Wu-Tang.
Yep. Yep.
Okay. Yeah.
Just all the classics.
Mobb Deep.
Mobb, of course, Infamous, one of the best records ever crafted. So you put that into this band, and you know these are people that you're playing with that you had met through doing Burst of Rage.
Yes.
Okay.
And then I also so to rewind a little bit, Sam Yarmuth hit me up one day because I had met him a couple times going to shows in Boston.
Right.
And he had like talked to Burst of Rage. I think at one point he was like, oh, I'd love to do the Burst of Rage record.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. And
especially for the time period.
Yeah. Which we were going to do it on Advanced Perspective, which.
Ah, that's right. Okay.
I will always be sad that didn't happen.
Yeah.
But so I knew Sam a little bit and he was starting Glory.
That's with Kyle. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. With Kyle. And he was like, you should play guitar. And so I went and jammed with them. And that's when I met Mike Ralston, who played drums.
Right. Okay. Okay.
And him and I hit it off. We hit it off instantly because I started playing a D'Angelo lick on the guitar.
Oh,
and
sick.
Like, just like while we were fucking around. And he was like, yo, is that D? Shout out to Virginia. He was like,
say VA legend. Let's go.
Yep. He was like, oh, is that D'Angelo? And I was like, yes. What? How do you know that? As we're jamming like Youth of Today covers.
Mm-hmm.
And him and I just instantly hit it off.
Were you in Glory?
I was in Glory. Yeah.
I did not know that either. I played with Glory, or at least booked Glory and stuff. So
dude,
I feel
people
like
forget that I'm Youth Crew, dude.
No, I know. I never forget that. I know that shit. I know. I mean, yo, hey, I mean, that's my shit too. So, I clock all the people out there that are still down with the style.
Yep. You know it.
Oh yeah. But so you're in Glory as well. Okay. So you meet Mike through doing Glory.
Yes, exactly.
Got it. Okay. And through a love of D'Angelo, shout out.
Yes.
So you meet him and had you met Chris through like just going to shows? Because I don't think Chris is at a band.
Chris was in Berkeley.
Was Chris? Did he play guitar or something?
He played second guitar.
Oh, okay. There we go.
Which is also okay. How I met like the like DC squad.
Mm-hmm.
And like the Turnstile squad.
Yep.
Is because he had done artwork for Give, for like That's Mosher's right. Delight.
Yes.
For Turnstile. And so when we played DC, all those dudes came to the Burst of Rage show.
Yes. Okay. There we go. Now it was all making sense. The web is connecting.
Exactly.
Oh yeah. And he did the Fury cover at the time, right? Yeah. He was doing like hella art, during this time period, of course. Okay. So you then from here, you like, you know, you start Countdown. When does Countdown like demo drop? And like, when's like the first show?
Drop 2016.
Yep, that makes sense.
That was an easy one to remember because the band existed for a mere month.
Wait, no.
And yeah.
How long was Countdown a band?
I think the demo comes out on like earliest February.
Okay.
And then break up in August.
Fuck. Oh, I saw y'all once.
In Richmond?
Yes.
Yeah.
The Canal Club tour. And I think I still have my shirt from that show too. My Countdown shirt with like the thumbprint.
Yep. That was a good shirt. Hardy who played bass made that shirt.
Yep. I have that shirt still. Okay. So you guys start in February and people immediately are down.
Yeah. Which was like the first thing I'd ever done that like people were like a fan of.
It was like off the bat, people were like, well, I think also it's like, okay, during this time period, this is 16. We're not in the full swing of this stuff yet, but it was like metalcore started becoming a thing with like the rise of popularity of bands like Jesus Piece and stuff. But then at the same time, you had like the demo core and like almost like what, like, I'm gonna make a reference for you. That may not translate for people, but almost like also like the Boiler Room side of stuff is like a thing too. So for the people that were like, we'll call it like a Reaper acolyte, like how that era was kind of over, when Countdown comes out, dudes I knew that were not down with either of those new rising styles were like, oh, Countdown's referencing New York hardcore. And like, not it's not too lo-fi, so I'm in. Like dudes that I knew that did like anything else like that were down with Countdown.
Yeah, Sam? Like I remember one of the goals with writing Countdown, like every heavy hardcore band is just like their references are like metal, like death metal, which I was like, I feel like there's just a big empty space right now where like heavy hardcore bands don't have to be metal.
No, they really don't. And that's where what a lot of them reference currently.
Like when I think of like, I mean, Trapped Under Ice, it doesn't sound like a metal band.
No. I mean, like it's like their reference points are like Crown of Thorns, VOD is probably the most metal it gets as a reference point. And then like maybe Marauder, but probably not even that. That's probably too metallic for them. Like totally. Influence wise.
So that was like definitely part of the goal was to be like, I wasn't thinking about like, I didn't know any of the Reaper guys or like, not like people from that generation.
Yeah. Because that era.
And even now I don't know a lot of
them. I mean, okay. So you're in Boston and you were in Houston. There were no Reaper bands in either of those places.
Right.
And like that. And like, so, and like,
I think the closest thing was like Rude Awakening.
Oh, but no, they weren't even Reaper though.
Yeah, right. But they, I feel like they're kind of like that vibe.
Which is so funny because like I was for sure just like a Reaperhead at the time, and I would and Breakaway would play with Rude Awakening like often.
Yeah, and I'm a huge Rude Awakening fan.
Dude,
but like
the 7-inch is so good.
The 7-inch is fucking amazing. But again, like they don't sound, they're not metal at all.
At all. That is a capital H hardcore band.
Yeah. Like people whoop ass.
Whoop ass to that. I would do it today. Yeah. Straight mean, Austin, I don't think any of that stuff, because it's like, I think of like the United Forces tour, and it was like Fire and Ice, Trapped Under Ice, Backtrack, Outcrowd. And then like maybe like a like I think Born Low and like one of, it was very like New York, VA, Atlanta. It like Boston was kind of on its own thing at the time. So I'm not surprised you didn't like in like interact with like any of these or come across any.
Yeah, Boston was really like kind of insular.
Yeah, like it was making like tastemaker stuff for sure at the time.
Yeah,
but it also felt and, like
even like a lot of them I've started to like meet now.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Yeah, like years later. So
yeah,
but totally. Countdown starts and it's seemingly like most people are down.
Yep.
Okay. So like, you know, you guys play that cool A7 show. And like how many shows did Countdown play?
We played in Boston maybe twice. We played in New York a few times.
Yeah, because I kind of remember considering you all like a New York band, I think, because Chris was there.
Yeah, Chris was there, and then our bass player Hardy was there.
Right.
And Chandler from Free At Last.
Oh, Chandler was in Free At Last. Okay.
Yes.
I did not know that. And now that makes another full circle for me. All right.
Yeah, exactly. So Chandler had just moved to Brooklyn, and I was like, yo, join my band. And he was like, okay.
Okay. Okay.
And so Mike and I were living in Boston and everyone else is in New York.
Hell yeah. All right. So, that, and again, that's why I kind of considered Countdown more of like a New York band. Just because, you know, it's like, I guess the majority of the members are there. And I think also, there was also a thing where it's like at the time, this is a space that I feel like Combust would fill later. There like weren't New York proper hardcore bands from my memory.
Yeah.
Yeah. Punk, there were punk for sure.
At the time.
Punk for sure, but not hardcore.
Yeah. Totally. Like there was like the whole, I forget like the name of their label, like Wood scene, like Dawn of Humans, that whole scene, which I was a fan of. I love.
Like Youth Attack.
I think Youth Attack. I think that's what I don't even fucking remember. But all those bands, I'm a fan of. Like I love all those bands, and I saw them play that because they were homies with all the Boiler Room scene people.
Which makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, and so I would go to the Boiler Room shows, and I was just like, "This is fucking awesome."
Hell yeah.
But yeah, there wasn't like a lot of like hardcore outside of that that I at least was on. My radar.
I mean, not on mine either. Like, I can't really remember. Like
I don't want to like speak for New Yorkers like that.
Me,
but like,
me neither.
I don't fucking know about it.
God, if you're listening, and you can give me, and you can give Connor and I proper hardcore bands from Brooklyn or Manhattan during this time period, please let us know. Because I have always been like straight up perplexed at the lack of that during this era.
And so at the time, like there was like Chandler moved to New York, and then like some of like the Have Heart Squad was mm-hmm. in New York.
I think
Hunan Julian Stray Rats moves to New York.
Oh, well, there ends up being this exodus of people from all these other places that are like have poppin' scenes moving to New York, and then they start a scene there.
Yeah. Like, so New York City Headhunters was a band that was around the same time.
That's right. I forgot about that band. Was that, was that Ron from like Florida?
I don't even remember who was in the band. I think maybe Hudon was in the band.
Oh, maybe. Crime then, Watch happens somewhere in there. I think that's a kind of like
Crime Watch is like starting to happen. I think Chris and Julian's band. Why can't I remember the name? Liberty.
Oh damn, I forgot about Liberty.
Yeah, which Chandler, Chris, Hardy, who was in Countdown, all like we like shared half the members with Liberty.
Okay. True. Okay.
So like around this time, a lot of people started moving to New York.
Yeah.
And I feel like wanted to start bands because playing fucking hardcore shows in New York is like the coolest thing of all time.
Well, you're guaranteed like people in the room.
You're playing in New York City.
Yeah. You're doing the classic.
Like, that's where hardcore is meant to be played.
Yeah. Agreed. You know, agreed. So you're playing the classic shit in like classic rooms, what have you. Around this time period, you're like probably close to finishing up school. Yeah.
Yeah. So I graduate that summer and move to New York.
Okay. But by the time this happens though, Countdown is done.
Yeah. Countdown breaks up mid tour in August over the drama with our Burst of Rage series, stupidest shit of all time.
Yeah, I know. I remember hearing about it being like, I don't think they need to call it over that.
But we were just kind of like, yo, fuck this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It wasn't even like, oh, we like have to end this.
No.
It was just like, it was like, yo, fuck this. Like, we have four songs. What am I going to fucking like care?
I get the sentiment where you're just like, yo, I can't be bothered. Like,
yeah, literally, like, okay, then fuck all y'all. Like, okay, bye.
Yeah. So, but then that means that when you move to New York, you don't have a band.
Yeah. So then, but we had a Countdown 7-inch room.
Ah, okay.
And we hit up Alex. And we're like, you should sing.
You would have known from Fury. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. Because we met him playing on the Burst of Rage tour. He hopped in the van.
Oh, chill. Hell yeah.
And so that's when we became boys with Alex. And then he moved to New York City.
That's right. That's right. Okay. And so then this, the unreleased Countdown record becomes Illusion.
Yes.
All right. So Illusion starts. It's got a cool theme. It's magic based.
Yeah. Which Alex just totally takes like these songs were written with like Countdown in mind and makes them a whole new thing.
Well, he's got like a sick, his voice sounds like it's like shredding paper or something. I know that sounds kind of weird, but like he sounds sick. He's a really good front man. So I mean like that all completely checks for me that like, you know, like he would bring kind of a different take to all this.
Yeah. He approached it from a completely different angle. Cause like Chris was like, Chris and I, in terms of like our hardcore fandom, we're very much like demo core in the way that we're like students. We're nerds about New York hardcore.
Yep.
And we're kind of trying to like bring that back to life when we like made Countdown.
Yep.
From a musical sense. But then I feel like Alex was not approaching it from that way at all.
Nah, I think he was just like, I'm going to do what feels natural.
Right. Which is awesome.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it's like what you talk about, the democore thing, where it's like you're trying to do something specific and Countdown sounded like that. Whereas like Illusion, much like what we just talked about earlier with bands like Step Forward and No Tolerance, was like, okay, let's see if this makes sense to you. Countdown was like the democore version. And then Illusion was like what we talked about with like the spirit of like the proto democore bands, where it was like, we're going to do a bit of more of an amalgamation.
Yeah. And there was less intention of like recreating or trying to capture something from the past.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Oh, that's a perfect way to put it. So Illusion starts out and, you know, and it's sick. Like, you know, I feel like people took to it pretty early.
Yeah. I remember when like people found out about Countdown, found out about Illusion. I was like, I don't even know how people are finding out about this band.
It was just like organically passed around, man, to be real. You know,
I feel like Chris and Alex like had lots of friends.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, because so I knew Alex and stuff. Yeah, for certain.
Yeah. I probably attribute most of that to them.
Okay, so you guys start Illusion, and you know, like it like, you know, it like does well. Do you guys like hit the road like with Illusion pretty quickly, or if memory serves, I feel like Illusion was less of a road band and more of like a travel to play like a show or two, or like just a one-off type situation.
Yeah, kind of like one-offs. We did a couple dates with Forced Order.
Yes,
the okay. Semi Yellow Connect.
Of course, the Semi Yellow. Yes, shout out to Nick.
Yeah, shout out to the boy.
Big fan.
Yeah, but like we didn't end up doing like a proper. I guess one year we played Triple B Fest or America's Hardcore.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And we did a like a tour down to Miami with Day by Day.
Also makes sense. Yeah, I feel like Alex had that South Florida connect too.
Yeah, he definitely like rekindled, because like even Burst of Rage had like a South Florida connect
for sure.
But then Alex definitely like even brought more of that to the table.
Right.
And then we did a full US after Ikulu starts.
Okay, so
with Illusion and Ikulu.
I do remember the Ikulusion tour.
Yes.
When does Ikulu start?
I think a year after Illusion.
Okay, so the 2018?
2018. So like begins and ends 2016. Mm-hmm. The next year Illusion comes out. The next year Ikulu comes out.
Okay, so you're on a heater. My man is cranking out the records right now.
Yeah, need to get back on cranking it out, dude.
I mean, hey, sometimes we gotta take
the machine needs to start firing again.
Sometimes we're in a valley, and we rise up to a peak. It's all good. So when when you start doing like Ikulu, was that kind of like a hey, like we didn't get really a chance to do like the countdown thing. Let's bring it back, but bring in a bunch of other influences. Like, how did that come about?
Well, I guess the way that it came about musically speaking is that when we were with Countdown with Chris and I always talked about how we literally wanted, we just wanted to copy Cro-Mags.
Right.
And so we wanted to even copy like their arc musically.
About to say, because like you get later Cro-Mags with Ikulu for sure.
Right. And so like, we were like, yo, the demo is demo. It wasn't even Age of Quarrel that we were going for. We were going for Cro-Mags demo.
Ah, that makes sense. Okay. That makes a lot of sense.
Which like I could even like go even like my college roommate at the time who was studying production and mixing engineering at Berkeley. I literally got him to mix the Countdown demo and the reference. I said, make it sound as close to this as possible, and showed him the Cro-Mags demo.
Like before the Quarrel type stuff. Hell yeah.
Yeah. And so like even down to like the way the recording sounds was like, make it sound like this.
So sick.
And then we wanted the 7-inch to like be more Age of Quarrel. And then we mm-hmm. wanted to eventually be like, get to a point where is it like, by the time they get to Alpha Omega, they're in this like really interesting point where you're like, are they a hardcore band or are they a metal band? I don't know.
Yeah. At that point, it's a real thin line. I mean, even on Best Wishes, it's like,
yeah, which my official hot take, I don't really care about Best Wishes.
Really?
That's my hot take. I'm dropping it right now. Dropping the bomb.
Damn, that is a hot take, because the song Age of Quarrel is fucking sick.
Yeah, there's moments.
Aww.
There's moments.
I mean,
Dead Amp has some of my favorite Cro-Mags riffs.
For sure. Is Chris the Demoniac on there? Is Chris the Demoniac
on there?
Yeah, dude, that's
a great one. Which, I mean, as you and me know, as Cro-Mags Head, is a Paris era song.
Yes, indeed.
So, like, is it even Best Wishes?
Nah, yeah. I hear you. Okay, so you kind of gloss over that one, but you're down with Alpha.
Yeah, I just thought that like the Alpha Omega sound of like it's both metal and hardcore at the same time.
At the same time, yeah.
Like I thought that was really interesting. And like obviously like Leeway kind of does that.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of bands that do that with like Marauder does it with death metal.
Yep.
But like Chromex is doing it with like thrash.
Right. Right.
And I wanted to do that. I wanted to be a band that was like doing that. And that was so eventually, like that was our plan with Countdown. Plan gets cut short. Eventually we're just like, yo, let's just do that.
Okay. So you do that kind of like alpha, and you do hear the Alpha and Omega on there, long songs, like you go into doing, you know, Akulu, and you got a kind of all this momentum that like you built it from Countdown, but like people kind of like didn't get to like, because it got cut early. I feel like people are like, ah, I like that. But then Illusion comes in and it's like, okay, I'm getting a taste of that here. And then Akulu is kind of the evolution of even that. And people are like, oh, like I remember people being like, this is really it. So you drop a demo for that. And I mean, like, because you kind of already had the Illusion machine going, do you immediately just like start touring together, or did it take a little bit of time?
I don't remember. I feel like it was kind of similar to what happened with the Burst of Rage Free at last tour, where like one day someone just said, hey, we're doing a full US.
I'm like, okay.
And it was the same thing with the Illusion and Akulu one, where like, I think it might have been Alex that brought it up. He was like, yo, Illusion and Akulu, full US.
Like,
and we just went.
Just did it. And yeah, and you, like had like enough love behind you where it was like easy to, you know, like get gigs and things like that, I'm sure. You're also in New York for school at this point as well. Is that correct?
No, I wasn't doing school in New York.
Oh, I thought you
were. I did all my school in Boston.
What'd you end up doing? So when you moved to New York, what'd you end up doing when you weren't playing music?
I was just fucking working whatever I could.
Oh, just anything. Okay.
Yeah. Just kind of like gigs. You know what I'm saying? I like, dude, for years I walked dogs around Brooklyn.
Fuck yeah. Nice. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know why I thought sucked. You ended up like going to like Columbia or something like that.
No. That was, I mean, Ned Russin went to Columbia.
Yeah, I know that. And Pat was there too.
Yeah, Pat was there. Okay. No, didn't end up going. I mean, I just fucking hate school.
Yeah, school sucks.
Like,
learning is cool. School is bad.
Yeah, I'm like, out of time mentally.
Okay, so you're just chilling and rocking.
Yeah, I was just like, every moment was spent like writing music, probably.
Fuck yeah. Okay. So you guys go on this tour. Are the shows good?
The shows are good. The shows are good.
Baller.
There might be weird ones, like, I mean, at that point, I had played so many shitty gigs with like Burst of Rage.
Yeah.
That I was like, oh, the worst gig on this tour is one of the best of that tour.
There you go. Good way to look
at it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like, bro, I'm from Houston. You know what I'm saying? Like, play some grim shows.
For sure. I've only played Houston once, but it was chill.
I mean, you know, Houston has some amazing legendary moments, but yeah, like it also has its dark days.
You know, you gotta take the good with the bad.
Yes.
But so, you know, you guys do this, and I feel like you're kind of doing like Akulu releases and Illusion releases sort of like in tandem, like kind of like back and forth, or am I wrong about that?
Yeah, no, totally. Like there was the Illusion 7-inch comes out. Mm-hmm. And then
that's the Locking Out record.
That's the Locking Out record.
So sick.
And then like a few months later, Akulu stuff drops.
And that's the, you do like the triple B, like two song thing. You do that, but then what I remember distinctly is like, you know, like you were doing stuff with Sam, and you know, seemed like it was like, you know, like a partnership that made sense. Like you would like, you know, like met him and stuff and everything, like when you were in Boston, you know, what have you. But then
we got really close when we did Glory.
Yes, exactly.
There was a time in Boston where I was like finishing up school and Sam was like doing, like, he had some weird job. like at an office.
Oh, I remember. I remember because I've interviewed him obviously on here and stuff and talked about it with him. Yeah.
And like during that era where he was like, fuck this job. And he was like trying to not be at it as much as possible.
Right.
Like him and I were chilling like all the time and we became really close. So that like, we were like, it was almost just like, oh yeah, you're doing a band. Like I'll put it out.
That's his style though. It's just like, oh, like, yeah. Oh, I'm your friend. Yeah. Okay. Like, let's do it.
Yeah. And Sam's the most HC person of all time in that way.
That is very true. He's just down. So during this time period though, it's like, you know, Akulu and Illusion are doing stuff in 2018. And then what's kind of going on for both bands in like 2019?
2019 is when I'm mostly just writing.
Okay. So you're kind of like
we're definitely gigging a good amount. Mm-hmm. But there's nothing like big.
Okay.
It like planned. And, well, okay, summer 2019 is when we do the full US.
Oh, okay. So you do it then. Okay, gotcha. So it starts in 18 and you do the full US in 19. I got it.
Yeah. And then COVID eventually happens.
Well, it's like, that's why I asked, like, what's kind of going on in 2019? Because then COVID happens in 2020. And, you know, since 2014, 15, you've been doing like bands every year. So like, as someone that's been doing that, like, what do you end up doing during this time period where you like can't do anything?
Yeah, I mean, definitely like, now that I think about it, I probably kill some momentum in terms of like putting out new music.
Sure.
But also I was like dead set on Akulu doing an LP.
Okay.
Cause at this point I had put out so much music and never put out an LP.
That's kind of crazy. Yeah. I guess you hadn't done an LP at that point.
Yeah. So I was like, and like everyone was in my ear, like, got to do an LP. I remember Mindforce put out an LP and Jay was like, bro, you got to do an LP, bro. Like he's like, that's when people like will really start to fuck with your shit. Cause like obviously Mindforce LP pops off.
Oh yeah. I mean like, you know, like those guys too. I mean like they're another, everything like that unit does seems to do like well. So it's like, you know,
I remember him saying to me, he was like, you need to do an LP. He's like, I don't know why, but people care about them more.
They do though.
He was like, people just do. And he's like, I don't know why. If a song's good, a song is good, well, it's on. But they will care. Like, more people will literally pay attention to you put out an LP.
100%. Songs on an LP get more love than songs released just like separately every time.
Yeah, which, I mean, I also don't get it, but
I don't get it. It's true, though.
But, like, yeah, I remember, like, Jay saying that. He probably doesn't even, like, remember saying that to me, but I thought about that a lot. And so during COVID, I literally locked myself in a room 8 hours a day, right?
Okay. So during this time period, you were just like, you are locked in.
And I'm like, just, no one can do anything. Cool. This is all I'm going to do.
You're writing a record.
Every single day.
You do end up crafting this and you make the decision to release it yourself.
Yeah.
And where did that come from? You know, where did it come from to start Cash Only and do this on your own?
Well, I mean, we were talking about what we should do like label wise with it. And Tedder, who's also in Akulu.
Oh yes.
He's got a mind for like fucking business shit.
Dude, he has got a fucking mind for this shit, man.
I'd always be like, I'd always talk to him and I'd be like, what's like the coolest thing to do? I was like, Sam would put it out and that would be great.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, but would anyone even blink at that? And I was like, I want this to come out in a way where people are like it's almost, like it grabs people's attention, if that makes sense.
Because people were probably expecting you to do it with Sam because you had worked with them previously.
Right. So,
and Michael is like, you know, obviously somebody I've like been like really close with my entire life. He is he's like a risk taker and it usually works out for him. And yeah, so it's totally. Like doing it on your own is a risk, but like Michael's the kind of guy that's going to be like, oh, yo, just we should do it. Like you should do it, you know, kind of thing.
Whereas, yeah. So like, I remember like I brought it up to him. I was like, should we do Triple B? He's like, ah, we could. But like, and then we were like, well, should we send this to like bigger labels? Because we were like about to record it.
Yeah.
We're like, should we send this to bigger labels? And then we're like, that probably won't amount to anything. Right. So like, we didn't want to like really go through the trouble of like being a tryhard. You know what I'm saying?
Sure, of course. Yeah.
And like, then I was like, well, all of the dopest bands, like historically, they start their own label.
I mean, like who are your reference points in that? I mean, that's true, but I'm curious. Who
Minor Threat.
Of course.
Yeah. Which, I mean, they don't put out any Youth of Today records, but what's it for? Like Revelation.
Rev did. Yeah. It was like that Rev, you know, SST.
Yeah, exactly. And fucking, Locking Out.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah. I guess I, you know what, that good reference points. Absolutely.
And so it was just like, that's like the stuff that, I don't know. I just felt like it could, like, even like Mosher's Delight.
Yeah, that too.
Like they just like, I'm pretty sure the first Mosher's Delight release is like in 10.
I think it's in 10.
Which is Zizak's band.
Yep.
And yeah, I just thought it would be fucking cool.
So you were like, okay, let's just try this cool thing out. And you put it out yourself.
Yeah.
And did you like that process or was it one that was difficult?
It was definitely hard. Like so the inception was myself, Mike Ralston, mm-hmm. and Chandler.
Mm-hmm.
That was the inception of the label. And we all had money because fucking Trump bucks.
Oh, yes.
Stimulus checks.
We have stimulus checks, indeed.
Which I didn't even do anything with mine because I was like, I don't even have anything to I don't have, like, I don't need to spend money on anything.
Right.
Like, my rent was being paid for by unemployment.
Oh, true. Okay, damn. So, yeah, you were definitely stacking.
And so, like, it was literally just, like, kind of stacking. And so we're just like, yo, if we each threw, like, a couple thousand bucks down, we could do this. And we asked Cheddar if he wanted to throw, you know, like $2,000 down. And he was like, no, I don't.
Nope. That sounds 100% like that. If you had gotten him to throw you $2,000 down, I've been like, what act of God did you
do? Yeah. Like what like mind games did you play?
There's no way that player is spending any money. So I'm not surprised by that.
Which, hey, he would have made money, but hey, it is.
Hey,
it is.
You know, he knows he's like a risk taker in regards to ideas, but he's like,
yeah, no, he has. And I like him and I have such a good relationship. We'll be like can bounce a million ideas off of each other.
Sure, of course.
And that was like the role he played a lot with Ikulu. And it was,
he's awesome like, to talk shop with like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, he's one of the best minds.
Sure.
But yeah, so ended up self-releasing and it was a good experience.
Yeah. I mean, people love that record, you know, and did it come out when shows had started up again, or did it come out when lockdown was still going on?
It came out, I think in June of 21.
Oh, so you're like right there. Shows had started.
Maybe 2020. I don't know.
No, it's 21. I just looked it up.
Okay. Yeah.
So it comes out like June 21. Shows are happening in like July. Like,
yeah, I think the first show back that we play is September with Fiddlehead.
Okay. And that's in Boston or in New York?
There was a Boston or a Rhode Island show in Providence and a New York show and a Philly show.
Okay. So you do a few with Fiddlehead there. So you guys hit that and everything. And it's like, I want to say not terribly long after this, you guys do the Turnstile tour.
Yeah. I think that started in like April. I want to say maybe May of 22.
So,
and like, yeah, I mean, like, they hit us up for that. Like, so I mean, sick. We put out the record and then maybe like a week after the record drops, they ask us to do it.
Crazy.
And at this point, like their record's not even out yet.
Yeah. So you go and you're just, you're playing huge rooms.
Yeah.
Like I remember seeing videos from that tour, just giant stuff. I mean, was
biggest
that like
shows I've ever played?
Was that like surreal? Like what? Like how was that?
It was fucking awesome.
Not I mean, sure.
It was, there was nothing really like remotely negative about it. Yeah, it was great. I don't know if it was surreal because okay. So Illusion had played with Turnstile before.
Sure.
And though the show we played with Illusion, it was like a Turnstile turnover tour. And Illusion opened.
Oh, wow.
And that was in the same room that we ended up playing with Turnstile on that tour.
Oh, okay. I was like, yeah, but I mean, like, was Turnstile at that level yet? But you're indicating that they were when Illusion.
Yeah, like I think when they, I mean, like, I don't want to, like, talk, speak for them, but, like, I think when they booked the tour for Glow On, they didn't foresee how many tickets they would be able to sell.
Like, they didn't know it was going to go that crazy.
Right. Which, like, how could you? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, of course.
I mean, that's not something that's predictable.
Yeah, that's like a once in a generation type situation.
Right. And so, like, I think they were kind of just like, yeah, this next tour is like, it's going to be a little bit bigger, but it's going to be like kind of business as usual. I guess it would have been the first time it was like a proper, because even that turnover tour with like a co-headliner, that Turnstile.
Sure.
So, of course. I mean, I don't know Turnstile's like history like that, but it might have been like the first headliner they did in rooms of that size.
Oh, maybe of that size. Yeah.
I'd have but to, that like, being said, back. Even then, all the venues were too small. Oh, like crazy. Every show That's was so oversold.
That's so crazy. So yeah, you play into like thousands essentially.
Yeah. The biggest show was, I think either Milwaukee or Austin. Both of those had like over 3,000 people.
Good Lord, man.
Which like, I'll even see like it was at Stubbs, the Austin show.
Mm-hmm.
Which is like a 3,000 plus capacity, and like bands that are like big bands that I love have played Stubbs, and I've gone and seen them now that I'm in Austin, and it's not even sold out.
Crazy. So you,
I'm just like, damn.
Yeah.
Like that really was like a really dope moment.
Fucking hell, man. So you, yeah, I mean, you get to do that. You guys come back. It's 2022, but I want to say, like, does Illusion do more this year, or is it because Aku is doing so well, you're just kind of focusing on that?
Yeah, just Aku is doing a lot.
Right.
If then around this time, Illusion's like, okay, if we're going to continue, we need to do more.
Sure.
And so eventually, Illusion puts out the song that we put out last year, Unreachable Stars.
And that was just like a one-off for just doing a song.
Yeah. It was just kind of like, if we're going to play music, let's make music.
That's cool. So, cause I remember being like, I remember seeing that when that came out, Mike Shaw was like, yo, this isn't like a promo track. This is like just a song that they're doing.
Yeah.
Which nobody does that anymore. So it's very interesting.
Yeah, we just wanted to, like, I don't know, we just wanted to get the, like, some steam back in the engine.
For sure.
And, yeah, I mean, Illusion LP coming soon, hopefully.
Hell yeah. Good to hear. Good. That's what people want to know about. And you also are putting out other bands during this time period as well on your label.
Yeah.
So you do the Raw Brigade record?
Do the Raw Brigade record. Do and the Combust record.
The Combust record, that's right. Both very successful.
Yeah, both. I mean, both great bands, both great records. Yeah, I mean, I couldn't. Both did great.
So you got Akulu, you got Raw Brigade, and Combust. It's three for three. You know, no dips there. Do you have plans for more records in the future on Cash Only?
Yeah, there's some stuff in the works right now. The band from, I'm just going to say it if they don't want I don't care. Never Again from New Jersey.
Yep. I knew that was coming. Sick band. I'm good friends with those. Yeah. Guys, so I'm excited.
They're fucking awesome.
Awesome
and
band.
Honestly, they're going to be as good as any hardcore band.
I firmly believe it. I think, and never again, guys, I say this like with like love. I think people like don't rate them correctly. Like
100 Well, there's a reason.
Okay.
There's actually a reason. And I feel like this is the reason why Cash Only is lucky enough to put out the record.
Okay.
Go is, for it. You know, who plays drums for them now is not who played drums for them on their recordings.
It's Matt Dre now. Yeah.
Now it's Matt Dre, which before, respect and love to the legend, it was AJ.
Oh, what?
I'm pretty sure. I mean,
I did not know that. I mean, Matt Dre plays drums for MAD sometimes, so I know the skill.
Matt Dre is a proper drummer.
It is insane. Dude.
Of the highest level.
He played for us at Black and Blue, and Mackie was side stage and like grabbed somebody and was like, yo, who the fuck is that?
Like, he's one of the ones. He's one of the ones.
And people don't know that about people. Don't know people don't put respect on Matt Dre like that either. To be real,
I know. And that's. I mean, I just Never Again record coming soon. There's some things, some conversations in the works. It perhaps will be a split release with another label.
Sick. Very cool.
Which I'm really excited about. Very more cool. On that soon.
Love.
They better not fucking break up.
Nah,
because they're so good.
Nah, I was talking to Avery earlier today. If they try to break up, I'll tell him I'll kick his ass.
They got to do an LP. They got to do it for HC's sake.
They really do, because it's like they're like a perfect, like they got kind of a locking out thing going on. They got the New York thing going on. Jason like is like about hardcore. So is Avery.
And with Matt Dre on the kit.
With Matt Dre on the kit, dude. Come on, man.
Like I'm not even kidding. Anything's possible.
I love Never Again. I'm a Never Again head.
Yeah.
So, okay. So we got some things to look forward to there. Now, during this time period, though, that we're talking about in the kind of 2022 and 2023, it's to my knowledge that Okulu slows down or stops.
Yeah, we've definitely, I mean, never say never.
Okay. I won't.
But definitely. To bring it back to System of a Down, there's a bit of a hiatus right now.
Okay. Okay.
It always comes back to System.
Always does. It really does come back to System every time. But you guys did get to go to Japan as well.
Yeah, which was fucking awesome.
But with Alex singing?
Yeah, Alex sang.
So it was like a collusion as a band, essentially.
Yeah, and like Okulu and Illusion has always like kind of operated as a unit.
For sure. So like that like makes sense.
Like obviously we've done things separately, getting Alex to do the vocals when Chris wasn't able to do that tour. It was like not really an issue.
No, I feel like that's like fairly seamless.
Right.
Especially did anybody like, say anything?
It's just a squad.
Or was anybody like, oh, weird? Or were they like, oh, that's cool?
Oh, I mean, there's definitely people who are like, where's Chris?
For sure.
But like, I mean, he wasn't there.
Yeah. He's like, well, you guys get Alex today.
You guys get Alex. Enjoy.
And so, and also, you know, hiatus involved like Illusions writing music. So that's kind of what's going on contemporary. And like we talked about at the beginning of the episode, you do move back to Texas at some point in here.
Yeah. I moved to Austin in September of this past year.
Okay. So you've not even been there a year. Are you working on anything in Texas?
Yeah. So I've had a couple like jams with some folks. Definitely things are in the works.
Fuck yeah.
I definitely feel like Texas hardcore is in like a weird point right now.
I'm curious as a native Texan, what you mean by that?
Yeah. I mean, so I think I always have thought that like Texas has the potential to be just as dope as anything.
I mean, like some of my all-time favorite bands come from that state. So
absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, I just feel like right now there's a lot of, I don't know. There's not a lot of people putting on for HC. I feel like in the state of Texas right now. Mm. And like there are some really heavy hitters that are,
sure,
and that are really carrying the torch in a, honestly, unprecedented way. Like, I honestly feel like Scourge.
Oh, great.
The way that they're kind of like putting Texas on their back.
Ribbon.
Is like Like, it's insane. I don't know if I've ever seen like one band represent a like a whole region as much as this band does.
As much as Scourge does, yeah. I love Scourge.
Yeah, not only to mention, they're fucking amazing.
Yeah, they rip. Beast songs.
Like, I think they're one of the best, like, in any genre of music.
Fuck yeah.
And like that whole squad of musicians, like the Narrowhead squad, they're like really hitting an amazing stride right now. But yeah, also, like, you know, it's not just like there's some cool stuff like Ozone is happening. And
I about to say, I feel like Ozone is one that's like they're hardcore. So it's like,
yeah, you totally. Know, and there's
the thing with Texas right now is Texas is like a lot of bands that are like kind of hardcore there are also very metal. Like, I love Fugitive, totally, but it's like pretty metal. Like,
yeah, Fugitive's like, great. They're in their own lane.
But they're in their own lane. I like the Judiciary people, but that's like not like fast pitch HC. It's a kind of like, it's a, like a different world, you know, whatever. And and then you've got kind of like the death metal people in Texas right now that are putting on very hard for like the death metal stuff, but it, again, not hardcore. So it's like the Frozen Souls and Creeping Deaths of the world are doing that. But I kind of see what you're saying. You're looking for something that's like, you want hardcore.
Yeah. And I honestly feel like at any moment it could happen.
Sure.
Because there's definitely like a like groundswell of heads.
Yeah. I mean, like, I've played some good shows there in the past few years. So it's like there's people.
Yeah, totally. And like, there's people who know what's up.
Right.
And so now it's just a matter of like the, you know, I mean, I feel like music is such a gamble. Like, it's just like every time you make new music or start a band, you're just rolling the dice. And
yeah,
sometimes you hit it, sometimes you don't. And it's not even like if it doesn't even hit, it doesn't even mean that it's not good. It's just like, didn't roll the dice, didn't hit it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, well,
it's like, you know, if you try to start a fire on a clear day, you'll be fine. If you try to start a fire on a day where it rains in the afternoon, you're going to have a problem. But it doesn't mean that there's something wrong with the fire.
Yeah, exactly. And so like, I feel like at any moment, you know, like the right combination of factors could just boom, be there.
There it is. Yeah.
And so that being said, I'm definitely trying to roll the dice a couple times while I'm here.
Fuck yeah. And, you know, here's what I want to close out on. I want to close out on your new project, Star 67, which is not a hardcore band.
Is a
like very cool, interesting, like rock project. I guess.
Yeah.
What are your main influences for this release? I really, really like that release. I'm a big fan, man.
I mean, what do you think the influences are?
I talked about it with Harry a little bit. He told me he hears Beck, and I hear that too. And then like otherwise, hold up, let me see what he and I said, because it's like after that, I'm not really sure. What I said was it was like, it sounds so familiar. While I'm also at the same time, not able to completely like put my finger on what sounds so familiar about it.
Totally.
He said LCD Sound System.
Love LCD Sound System.
Okay. And so what went into this?
The whole project, do something like not hardcore for a while now.
Sure.
Going to fucking music school.
Yeah.
Which I did 5 years of. I'm like, I want to like bring, like, I'm such a fan of music, and I'm such a diehard fan of like hardcore music, world music, hip hop music, rock music. And like, I want to bring like that, the vibe of like being a student of music just in general that I would bring with like other projects. I want to bring that to just, but also had very ever done. Has been so with such a specific intention. What would happen if I just made a song right now, not being like, oh, I want a song that sounds like that.
Ah, I see. Because yeah, it's like it's like Star 67 is like almost like intentionally genreless in a way, or like, I don't know how to put it, like not like styleless, but like it you're definitely not doing what you're doing with your other bands where you're like trying to do a specific thing.
Exactly.
Right.
Like, and like, it's almost like how all these songs were conceived, and there was a lot of other songs that were conceived that were just complete dog shit.
Sure.
Like I want to make like one day, like a Star 67 B-sides release. That's just all of the bad things I did.
Okay.
Because like, it was more kind of just like about the process of like, if I pick up a guitar right now and start playing it, that's the song.
Like what comes out?
Literally whatever I start playing, that's the song. And then the first words I say to sing along with it, those are the lyrics.
A fun practice, you know, of kind of like, not like testing yourself, but like let's not structure this too much.
Totally. And like, not to say I didn't pull from influences. If I can go by like each song, like there was a big New Order influence.
Okay. I can maybe see it.
There was definitely a Beck influence. There was a Happy Mondays
influence. Okay.
There's a Smashing Pumpkins influence.
Oh, duh. I definitely hear that. Okay. Yeah. I think I even saw that one of your stories and I was like, oh, of course. Why did I not clock that the first time?
Yeah. And so like, I was definitely like, there's things in mind, but a lot of that even came like after the fact.
Sure. It's just, so it was almost like you kind of just put out there what was like, oh, what is naturally coming out of me? And then thinking about it later, it's like, okay, where did I pull that from? Like, it was like, you're doing the kind of the reverse of what you had done with things previously. Okay. I see.
Do like one of the songs, the song Teapot on a Hill.
Mm-hmm.
This is how spontaneous the songwriting was. I was in the Whataburger drive-thru with my girlfriend. And she just said something. I don't even remember what she said, but she said it like this, like with like an inflection,
like a sing song,
not even singing.
Yeah.
She wasn't even singing. It was just an inflection. And I was like, wait, da, na, 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 na. And I just like heard, I'm a little teapot on a hill. And I was like, and I just sang that into my phone.
Huh. So it's just like real spontaneous and just kind of like this is like kind of like the most organic approach to making music in a way.
And yeah, like maybe it's like hippy dippy, but it's almost like the music's just kind of like all around you.
No, I fuck with that. And I don't disagree with you.
And like, it's even true for like hardcore too. Like sometimes I'm just like in the car and a rhythm comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Or like I just hear a drum beat I like, and I'm like, oh, I like that drum beat. And then I'm like, what if there was like hard ass riffs over that?
Right. Of course.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I totally get it. Do you plan to do, you know, like Rick release? I mean, like you always said you're gonna release potentially B-sides of that. And I think I even saw something today where you potentially gonna play like a live show.
Yeah, this Saturday, 4:20 in Atlanta, Disorder Fest.
Oh, that's right. That is this weekend.
Yeah, there's an after show happening with White Star and Get With This.
Oh, yeah.
And Star 67 is going to do
the Day by Day show. Okay, yes. Okay. Or no, Get With This isn't Day by Day Dudes. It's dudes from like...
The singer of Get With This used to play bass in Akulu.
Oh, Oliver?
Yeah.
Ah, yes.
Luke.
Oh, Luke. Oh, Luke sings Forget With This. Got it. Okay. It's like a rock band, like kind of like Manchester style, from what I know.
Totally.
Well, sick. So first Star 67 show going down this weekend, the day after this episode comes out.
Yeah, exactly. And even the live show will be kind of like, it's like an art project.
Just like figure it out. type situation.
A lot of it's just a way to stay creative. You know what I mean?
I think it's smart. You're working the brain, and you're working the brain. It's like lifting weights, where you're like, if you continue to do the same thing over and over, eventually your muscles are going to get used to it. So you have to eventually do something to shock them.
I almost describe these songs as like a puzzle. And what I mean by that is that maybe I have a riff or like a part or a lyric or a beat. Mm-hmm. But then I'm like, okay, well then let's say I have a drum beat. I'm like, okay, what's the chords? Okay, what's the melody? What's the bass?
Yeah, you're building.
What's
on
like
top.
The percussion? Yeah. And I'm like, I don't even know. But I'm like, let's try a bunch of things. Oh, that doesn't fit. Oh, here, this fits. That piece is done.
Ah, I see.
And like, then at the end, I've assembled a picture and I'm releasing it. It's just like, hey, here's the puzzle I made.
That's awesome. That's truly a really sick way of looking at it. And I can totally hear that in that release. And that takes us to, you know, current day, where you're at right now. You've given the world so many different instances of sick music. Connor, I want to thank you so much for coming on and telling everybody your story. Do you want to leave anybody with anything before we head out?
Form of Passion is fucking awesome.
Oh, thank you, sir.
You have fucking amazing guests. And I love how deep you go. It's fucking really sick, dude. And I think you should never stop.
I hopefully never will. Everyone, thank you so much for joining us. If you enjoyed this episode, support us on Patreon at www.patreon.com/formofpassion. And until next time, stay safe.